Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Here's your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, one of America's leading experts in foster care.
And welcome to this week's show of America's Foster Care Radio Show. This is Foster Care Radio, radio for foster care. This is your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, and you are listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John from the studios of the Fostering Success USA Radio Network on this beautiful, gorgeous spring evening, at least here in the United States, spring evening, May the 11th, 2015. And I'm so glad that you have joined us live this week. So glad you're listening in. So glad you're taking some time out of your very, very busy schedule to tune in. I want to wish all the mothers out there, biological, foster, adoptive, kinship, whatever it may be, a belated happy Mother's Day. You know, as a foster father myself of, oh goodness, dozens and dozens of children who've come through my home, I'm very, very appreciative of the love that my wife gives to every single child that comes to our house. And that's what good foster mothers do. They love their children. They love their children from foster care unconditionally. They love them just like they are their own children. In fact, for my own wife, there's no difference between biological, adoptive, and foster care. They are all the same in regards to children, and they are all loved equally. But you know what? Sadly for children in foster care, Mother's Day, for so many children in foster care, Mother's Day is not a day of celebration. I want to read you something that my dear friend Rhonda Ciortino posted on her Facebook page yesterday. Rhonda's been a guest on here before. She is a foster care alumni. She is a radio host. She is an author. She's a speaker, self-made millionaire. But she posted this on her page. And this is what it said. I want you to think about what she said. She said, "To everyone who has a tough time with Mother's Day, let's be grateful that she gave us life. We have everything we need to find and fulfill our purpose. And remember, it's only one day. Tomorrow, meaning today, the world will quit reminding us of what we don't have." Powerful, powerful last sentence. The world will quit reminding us of what we don't have. And that's it. That's for children in foster care. For children in foster care, many of these children do not have a mother, someone to call mom. And think about all those children who age out. 125,000 will age out this year, and they don't have someone to call mom. So something for you to reflect upon as we celebrate this Mother's Day. And just need to share that with you. Very, very powerful. Okay, we have a lot on this program this week. I'm excited about our guests this week. We have two authors. We have Madeline Melcher, and we have her partner in crime, we have Rachel Garlinghouse. They are the authors of the brand new book, Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journal, 52 Devotions and a Journal. It is a great, great book. I had the chance to look at it, chance to review it actually, a while back, and I'm excited. They're going to be on the show later on, and they're going to discuss that book with us. We also have later on the National Foster Parent Association, the NFPA News and Notes. We have our Foster Care Hero of the Week. We have from Facebook, we have our Foster Care Question of the Week. And you can find that on my Facebook page. In fact, you can find it on there right now, and you can respond to it, and maybe we'll read your response later on the program. And we have the Foster Parenting Manual Tip of the Week. This week, we're going to look at how to create a great relationship with your foster child's caseworker. All that on this week's program, plus a whole lot more. But right now, let's go to first the news desk, and let's look at the news this week. Perspective, this is from Massachusetts, prospective foster parents would have to pass a national fingerprint background check before being allowed to take in at-risk children under a proposal passed by the House. The plan, adopted as an amendment to the House budget's proposal last week, mirrors requirements already in place at Massachusetts Early Education and Care Department, according to the House Minority Leader Brad Jones, who helped author the program. Now, Brad, a Republican from North Reading, Massachusetts, says, "If we're licensing facilities and we want people to have a certain level of comfort, then why would the state Then why, when the state is putting children into custody of a family or a person, wouldn't the state make sure the same standards are in place? I think that's just a rational expectation. The proposal would also require background checks for everyone 15 or older living in the home of an adoptive or foster parents, as well as any employees or volunteers, quote, who have the potential for unsupervised contact with children and care, unquote. You know what? I think that's just common sense. In fact, it's surprising that more states have not done that already. So good for Massachusetts for requiring background checks for foster parents. It should be mandatory in all 50 states. Indeed, it was for the state that I am. My wife and I had to go through dozens and dozens of background checks, and I'm glad that we did. You know, not everybody can be a foster parent, and frankly, not everybody should be a foster parent. Okay, we go to Alabama, where I was just there. I was just there last week at the Alabama Foster and Adoptive Parents 2015 conference. Had the delight of doing a seminar there, Marriage and Foster Parenting, Making It Work. Had a great time there in Alabama. So thank you to all the wonderful Alabama foster parents. But let's go to the news here from Alabama. Last week, the Alabama House unanimously approved the Fostering Hope Scholarship Act, sponsored by Republican Paul Lee. The bill creates a scholarship for individuals currently or formerly in Alabama's foster care program for tuition at a two-year college or university, or for the fees associated with job training courses or skills certification offered by colleges or universities or other Alabama state training programs. According to Representative Lee, every child in Alabama deserves access to a quality education and a chance at a bright future. And this bill helps our foster children the opportunity to pursue those options. I'm proud to be able to sponsor this important legislation that can be life-changing. Yes, it can be life-changing indeed. Lee noted the legislation provides foster children with the tools they need to be self-sufficient, tax-paying members of society, and the bill provides children that are either under state custody at the time of his or her high school graduation or GE certification, or have graduated from high school or earned a GED certificate. In addition, the bill creates a mentoring service run through the department. So lots of great things on that bill, House Bill SB-157. Great there. You know, so roughly, if you listen to this program before, you know we've discussed it many times, 55% of children in foster care will drop out of high school. Only 4% will go to college, and only 2% will graduate with a four-year college degree. So hopefully this bill will do some major, major work in Alabama. Okay, we go to Florida, where a foster child has filed a lawsuit against his foster parent and child welfare providers, known as Kids in Distress Incorporated and ChildNet Incorporated, alleging that he was sexually abused by his foster parents and that the private child welfare agency did not conduct the proper background checks prior to the fostering. The child, only identified as R.S., said that his foster father had a history of child molestation and sexually abused him. Now, according to Howard Tellenfield, the Fort Lauderdale child abuse attorney representing the child, at the age the foster father requested to receive a foster care license in 2008, but incomplete background checks were not performed. The foster father was arrested and is on charges of cocaine possession and investigated for lewd and lascivious acts after a minor male reported that he had shown him pornographic pictures of a child and asked him to perform sexual acts. Now, it's stories like these that turn my stomach. I have no doubt they turn your stomach too, but we have to be aware of these stories. It is important that we bring these stories to you, so as a foster parent or as a child advocate, you are able to discuss these stories with full knowledge, and you're able to make sure that these types of stories do not happen. Again, we have to be the advocates for change, you and I. All right, we go to the Great White North, into Canada, where following an inquest into the death of a 6-year-old boy in care, the Saskatchewan government has released a plan designed to improve the child welfare systems and support for vulnerable families and children. The inquest made 19 recommendations to the Ministry of Social Services, and some of those recommendations include parental services agreements should be followed up, stronger recruitment and retentive incentives for foster parents in rural areas, Concerns with regards to the child's behavior and or specific needs be brought to the immediate attention of the prospective foster parent. Communication and file sharing between all pertinent parties with regards to child welfare. Funding efforts be made for a facility for children with complex needs under the age of 12. Those are just some of the 19 recommendations. So it's great to see that Saskatchewan, Canada, is making steps to improve their child care services. You can find the full report and all of these reports on my Facebook page, Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert. Okay, we go to California for our good news story of the week. And this week we look at Kim Lee Bublitz. Now, before she became a foster parent, Kim Lee Bublitz was busy raising children of her own in good times and bad. While her husband Nick was out of work for 9 months in the mid-1980s, Kim taught aerobics in the daytime and worked as a waitress at night. Oftentimes, she would take her younger children along with her to the aerobics studio. She says, "My mom found jobs that she could take me with. She never left us with her babysitter," that's what her daughter says. "She filled in the gaps, and you never heard her complain about it." Kim began caring for foster children in 1990 when one of her daughter's friends complained about her foster home. Kim took classes to become a licensed foster parent and took the child in. She continued to open her home to foster children, most of them under the age of 10, for the next 2 decades. She brought as many as 3 kids at a time into her 5-bedroom house. Since that time, she has had over 50 children come through her family, all the while raising 3 biological daughters and another one she's adopted, another daughter from Korea, as well as 2 sons she's adopted from foster care. She stopped taking in foster kids about 6 years ago. She is our foster care hero of the week, and we celebrate and recognize her and all of the wonderful foster mothers this week and on Mother's Day. Okay, it is time for a commercial break. But when we come back, we are going to have our special guests, the authors of the brand new book, Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journey, 52 Devotions in a Journal. We're going to talk to those authors, and we also have the NFPA News and Notes and a whole lot more, plus your phone calls. That number, 347-324-5140. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Now there is a book available for children coming into foster care. The book is called A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. Written in simple language and fully illustrated in color, this storybook is designed to help children in care or moving into care to settle in and answer some of their sensitive questions. Accompanied by notes for adults on how to use the story with children, it will be a useful book for foster parents and caseworkers, as well as social workers, teachers, and anyone else working with children in foster care. A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story, available at Amazon and where all books are sold.
Greetings. My name is Daniel Heimpel, and I'm the publisher of The Chronicle of Social Change, an online news site covering child welfare and juvenile justice. Be sure to check out our money and business section, which includes a huge database of youth services funding opportunities from private foundations and all levels of government. Thanks for taking a look at chronicleofsocialchange.org.
Hi, this is Chris Chmielewski, owner, editor, and creator of Foster Focus magazine, the only monthly foster care magazine in America. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo. Enjoy and visit fosterfocusmag.com.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And welcome back to America's Foster Care Radio program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. Coming up in a little bit, we have our foster care question of the week. What is the one thing new you learned after your first placement of a foster child in your home? We'll be reading some of your responses later on the program. The number to call in, 347-324-5140. At this time, it is my pleasure to have the authors of the brand new book, Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journey, 52 Devotions and a Journal. The authors are Madeline Melcher and Rachel Garlinghouse, and they are on the air. Rachel and Madeline, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
My, My pleasure. So, ladies, you've come together and you've co-written this book, Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journal, or Journey. What led you to write this book?
Rachel, do you want to take that question?
Sure. Well, Madeline and I both had the idea to write the book long before we had ever met. And then one day I was online and I had seen Madeline posting in a Facebook group. And so we contacted each other and realized that we lived close to one another and started talking about our interests and our family's adoption stories. And eventually we met and decided that we would write this book together. And mainly what inspired us to write the book is that we needed a book that we didn't have when we started our journey. Because as you know, adoption, fostering, it can be very isolating. It's just a special way to grow your family or to nurture children who are in care. So she and I met up and just decided to write this book together and really to put something helpful and positive into the adoption community. And to provide the encouragement that a lot of families, they really desperately need along this journey, because it's just adoption, fostering, parenting children, it doesn't just end once they're adopted or once they've been in your care for a long time. There are challenges that crop up quite a bit for the parents and for the child. So we wrote this book to provide people with that inspiration and encouragement that they need. And this is not a fluffy book. So it's definitely, we get to the hearts of matters and we don't just say, oh, put on a smile and dance in rainbows, because we all well know that's not going to work. So we provide practical encouragement for families.
Now, Madeline, are you an adoptive parent yourself?
I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about your own journey in that?
Well, I am an adoptee myself, and I had spent a brief time in care before I was adopted at 14 months old. And, you know, it has always just been a part of my life, and, you know, we always knew that we would adopt ourselves one day. And I was kind of taken aback, actually, as an adult, seeing all of the different elements of adoption, because all I had ever seen in my life was the love, and so I was obviously anxious to share that part. So, you know, all these things, all the experiences that we have, whether you're adopted or you're not adopted, obviously culminate in your life to bring you where you are now. And, you know, sometimes we just don't know what to expect in any given day, much less with the adoption process or, you know, taking in children who are in care and all the different things that requires, just because we're all different human beings. But I have always been a person who leaned quite a bit on my faith, and that was probably the greatest gift my mother ever gave me, was the gift of faith. And I was surrounded by grandmothers and great aunts and all kinds of people in my life that also had that faith. And we also had adoption. You know, there were people in my family that were adopted generations before I ever was. And so it just was a part of our family and just a part of love. And so I was anxious to be a part of something that was positive and healthy and helpful, but also brought in that element of faith that has always kind of carried and driven my own family.
Oh, that's great. Great. And you've adopted how many children?
Three. Rachel and I each have three. Mm-hmm.
Wow, and we're all three from foster care?
No, they weren't. But we, you know, sometimes the situations, even outside of foster care, would otherwise be cases that would be that would otherwise go to the state. So we are our biggest. Part of our adoption journey was that, you know, we wanted to provide homes for children that needed them,
right.
and that's what happened. So
right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And how about you, Rachel? How about your adoption story?
Absolutely. As Madeline mentioned, we have three children we adopted. All of our adoptions are domestic, transracial, and open adoptions. And we began our journey in 2006 when I was diagnosed with a chronic disease that would make pregnancy very dangerous for me. So we chose adoption and proceeded that route. And we have also provided interim care for two children, so not technically foster care, but we had one little guy for 3 weeks in our care, and then we had a newborn baby girl that we took home from the hospital, and we had her for a few days in our care as well. So my children right now are 6, 4, and 2, so as you can imagine, my life's a little hectic and exhausting, but it's also wonderful and beautiful.
I can't imagine. I, my wife and I have adopted 3 children as well, so I guess we all have triplets, don't we?
Yes.
Now,
I know you've had many children.
I have had.
many children. I just love that, and I love what you had to say about your wife, because I do think that's the most important part. My sister came biologically, and, you know, I had come through adoption, and that is one thing I can say is I never felt any difference in any love, any treatment, anything, aside from the fact that I was a different human being. You know, we all handle our children a little bit differently just because of their personalities and who they are as people, but not because of where they came from. And I think that that's such an important distinction. And I just love that you shared that about your wife. And, I get that warm, fuzzy feeling when you talk about her, because, there certainly are so many wonderful people who take children into care and who bring children in through adoption. And that is just such an important part, is not to feel that difference. I think that's why I've always been so at home with my own adoption, is knowing my own story and knowing that I had that same kind of love. So that's so important. And so thank you and your wife, for both of you, for what you do for children.
Thank you. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This is Foster Talk with Dr. John. Now, Rachel, what are some of the topics covered in this book?
Absolutely. We list them in alphabetical order, and there's 52 of them, so one per week. So it gets you through a whole year of reading. Or you can either go in alphabetical order, or you can just pick the topic that pertains to whatever's going on in your heart and mind and family that week. But some of the topics that Madeline and I cover, and we each write 26 of the devotions in the book. So some of the topics that we talk about are celebration, disappointment, doubt, heartache, hope, peace, joy, love, uncertainty, surrender, transformation, worry, and obviously many, many more, because we have 52 of them. But that's just a sampling of some of the topics we cover.
Now, Madeline, did the two of you have to, did these topics come easily, or did you have to sit down and hash them out for a while? How did that process go about?
You know, we sat down and at dinner one night and decided that, you know, let's start a list of some of the feelings that we had and some of the things that we've been through or we know other people have encountered. But generally, everything, you know, is something that has touched us personally, and that's how we decided who would be taking which devotion. Obviously, there's crossover there, and we both felt certain things that the other had written, but things we felt, you know, more strongly about, and shared those. And there's a lot of personal stories and right there, so that you can feel at home. And we want to share a piece of ourselves too, because, you know, you really can't share faith without sharing a piece of yourself and a piece of your heart. And so we just put it all out there and, you know, hope that it helps people a little bit to know. Sometimes people just want to know there's somebody else out there that has felt the same way and that feels the same way, that tomorrow's another day, or, you know, yes, this is great and you're going to be, you know, fine. Sometimes you hear so much negative around things. You want to hear that, you know, it's fine. People are happy. People, you know, love each other and are living in happy families. And so, you know, it gives little pieces of all of that, and kind of like a warm hug and a pick me up off the floor when I'm, you know, crumpled down. You know, we've all had all those different kinds of moments, and so I hope it's a little bit of all of that.
You know, you touched on something earlier about how you wouldn't be, you really rely on your own faith. I would not be able to be a foster parent without my own faith, and I truly believe that each of my adoptions was a gift from God to my family. Rachel, do you kind of feel the same way, that your adoptions were gifts from God?
I do feel that they absolutely were a gift from God. First of all, if we had not adopted, we would not be parents, and we knew that we, you know, always would want to be parents. But it's amazing the doors that have opened to us in terms of being able to not only raise our children in a Christian home, but also to be ministering to the families that we have open adoptions with, and being able to open our hearts and have this huge, strange family orchard that we have now, which
right,
I never
right.
envisioned when I thought I'd become a mom, that, you know, we would have such a big family that's connected in so many interesting ways. But there have been times in our adoption journey where the second time we were waiting to adopt, we were chosen on the first day of waiting, which rarely, of course, ever happens. And I almost laughed because it's that ridiculous. But we were chosen on the same day as my husband's grandfather's funeral. And so it was this interesting circle of life, of death in our family and then birth within our family as well. And each of our adoptions is very unique and has a different story, but I think nothing has rendered me more helpless and reliant on God than choosing to adopt. Absolutely nothing. It's faith-shaking. And even the continuance of, you know, parenting children by adoption, they have questions and concerns that any biological children we would have had don't have. And so it continues to just push me back to faith when I tend to get all bullheaded and self-reliant and controlling like I do sometimes. So, and I talk about that a lot in the book, because any type A people out there will relate to my personality and problems. So we just, Madeline and I were just very honest in the book and really put ourselves in there. And, you know, we both have a strong faith, but we're also very realistic and have days where we just want to, you know, curse and throw things and get upset and confusion and anger and hurt and tears. All of those things are what adoption is really about. And we
right.
put that in the book. Yeah.
Right. Now, Madeline, I felt, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt this was a book that could be enjoyed and used by any parent, not necessarily an adoptive parent. Would you agree with that?
That's funny. My children's nana is visiting right now, and of course she read the book, and she said that she was going to share it with all of her children who don't have any plans of adopting at this moment, just because she felt the same way, that even though one of them doesn't even have children yet, that it would be something helpful, just life lessons. And of course that's what the Bible is. I mean, when you look at some of the stories in the Bible, you're like, but they truly are full of you know, wisdom and ways and direction that, you know, even though we aren't quite living the way they were in biblical times, still have direct meaning to what we're doing today. And so I like to think that the devotions do as well, just because those are the things that guided me. I mean, it's wisdom of my great-grandmothers, and goodness knows they did a lot of parenting and not with the washing machine I have. So, you know, sure, I would hope that anybody could pick it up and find something helpful, because that's what faith is. Faith is something that will help you and guide you and direct you in any given situation. So, yeah, and I find my faith to be a very positive thing. And when I lean on it, I lean on it for something good. I need a, you know, something to get me going, to get me moving again. And sometimes to say, you know what, there's joy in this right here. It's not just to sit with the sadness and get through the sadness. It's to go, oh, you know what, there's a blessing right there. There's something I see right there that's a positive. Or look at the headway we made today with this. And so there's a million positive things, too, that sometimes we don't see in the light of other things that are going on around us. And that's faith.
I agree.
That will
I agree.
Help you see that. Mm-hmm.
I agree. So, Madeline, what would you expect, or what do you hope readers are going to gain from your book?
Well, I hope that it will help them to keep through the through the process with the positives. You know, my mom didn't go around with a name tag that she was an adoptive mother, and I certainly didn't feel like, you know, I needed to wear a red name tag that I was an adoptee. You know what? She's my mother, and I am a child, and I want people to see, you know what, you're a parent, or you're working towards being a parent, and here are all these positive things, and here's all these good things, and here's when there's bumps in the road. God's there. And whether they need a hand to hold, they need a hug, or they need a high five that day, I hope that book, you know,
depending on where they head, for what devotion and what feeling they go to, provides that to them. Because I want it to be a little bit like going to my grandmother's front door and she would give you a big old hug and invite you in for sweet tea. That's what I want the book to feel like. You know, and if everybody could come over to my house right now, that's, I would give them tea too. So that's what I hope the book feels like. I hope it just feels like we want you there, and you know what? God wants you there, and you are always invited to his table. And so I just want people to remember that. It's easy to forget that when you're in the midst of all these other things going on, particularly when you're dealing with things like adoption and foster care.
Now, Rachel, did you, when you began the book and then you finished the book, did you change it all? Did writing this book, the process of the book, change you in any way?
I think the part that changed me the most was reading Madeline's devotions, because, you know, Dr. John, you've authored 10,000 books, I feel like, and we're just in awe of all the writing that you do, but we, you know, reading Madeline's devotions was like, I'm like, this woman's so smart. Holy cow. Like, where has she been my whole life? And why wasn't she there to smack me and give me some sweet tea when I was waiting to adopt? Because I really needed some wake-up calls. And, I mean, just reading someone else's perspective on faith but sharing the same faith was tremendously eye-opening for me. And then even going back sometimes and reading what I wrote, I was like, I wrote that? Really? I need to learn some lessons here. And it's funny how God wrote through me to teach me lessons. It's, you know,
right.
It's very bizarre. But she and I mean, we could not be more proud of this book. I mean, this is like, put your heart on paper and hand it to strangers and hope that it does some good. And we've already received, just the 2 days after the book came out, a friend had called me and said, waiting to adopt, and said, you know, I'm on this encouraging devotional on this one particular day, and it is exactly what I need to hear, and here's why. And it's just amazing that, you know, we put the book in the order that we did, and we just had the idea and went with it, and people are getting exactly what they need when they need it, and that's a God thing. That really has nothing to do with Madeline and I.
That's really great. That's great. So, Rachel, how can people get this book? How can people find it? Where can they get it?
Sure. I mean, they can find us on Facebook. Madeline and I both have, you know, pages on Facebook, and you can look us up. But the best place to buy the book is Amazon. That's how you can probably get it the quickest. But any bookstore can order it in for you. And our book is available on Amazon in a paperback copy and then also in e-reader copy for those who like to read on their e-reader. So any of those places.
Now, Madeline, what's next? What do you two have planned next?
My next book is actually a book from the adoptee perspective. So, that's something I am working on now. I'm hoping to have it completed by the end of the year. So, with three children, I don't know how. I seriously do not know how you do it, John. You would just really, you have the talent there because you can get these things done. But it will probably take me to the end of the year to get this particular project done, and I want to be sure it's done right. There will only be one like it from me. So, So I'm really looking forward to that, and I hope that it will be helpful to a lot of people. So.
All right. How about you, Rachel? What can we expect from you next?
Well, I'm working on two books at the same time, which is not always the best idea, but one is totally different from what I typically write about, and I'm writing a book about homeschooling young children of color, which is something that I've really started doing this past year. And then the other book that I'm working on is going to be very sassy, I would say, but informative on adopting an infant. So those are the two books that I'm working on. And, of course, Madeline and I very well might work on something together in the future.
Oh, great. Great. The book is entitled Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journal, 52 Devotions and a Journal. And I had the privilege of looking at the book earlier in the year, and ladies, it's great. It's a great, great book. I was so impressed with it. I loved it. I loved the part that I could, as you said earlier, it was for my small brain, it was in alphabetical order, so that was neat. But then I could flip through the book and find a devotion that was specifically pertinent to what I was going through at the time. So I love the book, and I really appreciate you coming on the air this week.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I have to tell you, John, I love A Different Home, a new foster child story book. I just do, and the illustrations are so pretty. So I just had to tell you, I'm a fan. I'm not just a guest. So, yeah. So thank you so much for that. What a great resource.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies.
And
well,
thank
love
you
to have
for having us.
My pleasure. When you have your next book come out, we'd love to have you on again.
Great. I'd love to be here. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
my
John.
Pleasure. Sure. Thank you. That was Madeline Melcher and Rachel Garlinghouse, and they're the author of Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journal. Pick it up on Amazon.com in an e-version. Pick it up on in paperback. Find it through their Facebook page. But this is a book that you want on your nightstand. It's a book that you want on your kitchen counter. It's a book you want in your purse. It's a book you want on your computer. It's a great, great devotional. You can pick it up anytime and just flip through it and find out a devotion that's hitting you right in your heart at the moment. All right, we got to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to have the NFPA News and Notes, our foster care question of the week, and our foster parenting manual tip of the week, as well as your phone calls. 347-324-5140 is the number for America's Foster Care Radio Program. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com.
Hey friends, my brand new e-reader book is out, specifically for Kindle, the Foster Parenting 101 series, and this month of May, When a Foster Child Leaves Your Home. You know, saying goodbye is never easy for anyone, and may be especially difficult for you and your foster child. Perhaps one of the most difficult aspects of being a foster parent is the moment when your foster child leaves your home. So many times for myself, the removal of the child from my home has come with little warning and with great emotion. As a foster parent, your home becomes a place where foster children come for a period of time with the goal of being reunited with a family in the near future. In this Foster Parenting 101 ebook, I examine the many reasons why a foster child might leave your family and how all can be greatly affected. Offering tips, strategies, and personal stories from my own experience, this is going to be a book that's going to help you in a very, very difficult time as a child transitions from your home to the next home. The Foster Parenting 101 book from the E-Series, When a Foster Child Leaves Your Home. Pick it up on Amazon.com.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And we're back with America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This is your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, and we come now to the Foster Parenting Manual Tip of the Week. And this week we look at how to create a great relationship with your foster child's caseworker. Now, in order to be a truly successful foster parent, you will need to work closely with your foster child's caseworker and your child welfare agency. It is important for the well-being of your foster child that you work alongside the caseworker and the agency and help to build an effective partnership and a strong working relationship with both. With this strong relationship, all of you will have a much better chance of guiding your foster child through the many difficulties and challenges he will face, as well as work together to see that his future is highly bright and as successful as possible. Now remember, you are a team, and a teamwork is important. Keep in mind, your caseworker and your agency want what is best for your foster child, as well as what is best for you. After all, without foster parents like yourself, agencies and caseworkers would not be able to place children into foster care, into foster homes. So here are a few ways to create a healthy relationship with your foster child's caseworker. Number one, do understand that they have a difficult job. Caseworkers have a most difficult job as they work in what is difficult and stressful environment. While your foster child is your main focus in regards to the child welfare agency, caseworkers have a large amount of children in their caseload. They will see on a daily basis children who have been abused and neglected. They will have the responsibility of taking a child out of a home against the strong wishes and sometimes hostile conditions of both the child and the birth parent. They'll be required to work with birth parents, instructing them how they can be reunited with a child. At times, caseworkers will sit in a courtroom as attorneys and birth parents battle over the custody of a child. The amount of paperwork that corresponds with each caseworker can be daunting. Well, add to that the slashed budgets, less resources, and a larger workload. Oh my goodness, they have a tough job. Number two, do create an open and honest line of communication. Like any healthy relationship, it is important that your relationship with your foster child's caseworker is an open one and is built on trust and mutual respect. It is important that you share all information with the caseworker and the agency about your foster child. Caseworkers have the responsibility of documenting everything when it comes to each of the foster children in their caseload. Make sure that both of you have current telephone numbers and email addresses for both home and work. Plan ahead, if possible, for home visitations as well as visitations with the birth parents. If you work from the beginning to establish a strong relationship, these requests will be easier to make and have a better chance of being met. Number three. Do be prepared when you meet with your caseworker. Now, before you meet with your caseworker, whether at home or another setting, make sure you're prepared beforehand. Have all the proper forms and information gathered together which you might need for the caseworker. This includes any school progress and report cards, contact information for his teachers, calendar of upcoming events in your household, medical paperwork, receipts, invoices, and any personal observations you may have noted for your child in foster care. Also, have with you your foster child's medical information, such as a doctor's name, address, and phone number, primary health care information, as well as any possible dates for future medical and dental appointments. Plan ahead if possible for home visitations, as well as visitations with the birth parents. If you work from the beginning in establishing a strong partnership, these requests will be easier and have a better chance of being met. Number four, in creating a great relationship with your foster child's caseworker is be an advocate. Your foster child needs you to be an advocate for him, fighting to see that he has a positive future. As the advocate, you have the right to be heard in your role as a foster parent. Your foster child needs someone standing in his corner, so to speak. When he is enrolled in school in your area, he will need you to work alongside his caseworker, ensuring that he is in the right classes. If he has learning disabilities, he'll need you to make sure that the right phone calls are made, the right teachers are informed, and the right testing is administered in order for him to determine how best he meets his learning needs. If he comes back to your house after meeting with the birth parents and is emotionally confused, he will need you to inform his caseworker about the turmoil he's facing when visitations occur. And if he is in need of some kind of therapy, he's going to need you to insist that a therapist is assigned to him. Okay, so what don't you do? What don't you do when creating a strong relationship with your caseworker? Well, number one, do not believe that caseworkers don't care. Your foster child's caseworker went into the business of helping children for one reason, and that is because she wants to help children in need. She has feelings and emotions just like you, and she cares for the well-being of your foster child. She also appreciates what you're doing as well and how difficult your job is. Keep in mind, your caseworker wants what is best for your foster child as well as what is best for you. After all, without foster parents, caseworkers would not be able to place children into foster homes. So remember, she has a difficult job too. And sometimes decisions are taken out of her hands and made by the court. Your foster child's caseworker can be upset by these decisions and can grieve the well-being of your foster child just like you. Number two, do not expect the caseworker can do it all. She is not Superman or Superwoman. With more and more foster children coming into foster care every single year across the nation, and with a shortage of caseworkers available, these caseworkers who are employed with child welfare agencies are finding themselves with more and more children to look after. Not only do these caseworkers look after foster parents and foster children, they are responsible for working alongside the birth parents as well. Along with this, they have to ensure that all legalities in conjunction with your foster child are up to date. I'll add to this the fact that they have to visit the home of each foster parent and child once a month, and a mountain of paperwork ever before them. It is so easy. It is so easy to see why many caseworkers do not stay in their jobs for long periods of time, as work burnout is very, very common in child welfare cases. All right, number three, and what not to do in creating a healthy relationship with your child's caseworker. Number three, do not fail to help out. As caseworkers are oftentimes overworked, your foster child's needs may not be met right away. In fact, you may find that his needs are not being met at all. Your foster child will need you to persevere and not give up. Your foster child will also require you to remain optimistic, you know, the sunny side, even in the most difficult of times. At times, it will require you to be unwilling to take no for an answer and not settle for second best. It may require you to think outside the box as you and your caseworker work together to create other ways to solve problems that he faces. It is easy to see why many caseworkers do not stay in their jobs for period of times, as burnout is so common. Finally, do not fail to give your foster child alone time with the caseworker. Part of your caseworker's job is to observe your foster child and how he interacts with your family. Your caseworker has the responsibility of ensuring the foster child's health, safety, and his well-being. Your caseworker is going to want to take some time to talk with your foster child. It is important that you give your foster child and caseworker privacy and space. Encourage your child to open up to the caseworker. After all, your caseworker is probably one of the few consistencies in his life at the moment, a person he will see on a regular basis, and a connection to his birth parents, his family, and his life before he came to be placed with you, and maybe after he leaves your home. Help your child develop a strong and positive relationship with his caseworker in his own way. When he leaves your home, whether it's through reunification or some other means, he will likely still remain in contact with his caseworker. So it is important to his mental health that his relationship with his caseworker is a good and productive one. Your foster child's caseworker has a lot on her plate. She has to look after all the concerns and all the needs of not only your child, but many others. There are also the other foster parents that she has to meet with each month. Along with that, she has to work with birth parents, as well as attend countless court hearings with a little preparation on your behalf, as well as organization and a positive attitude. The working relationship between you and your foster caseworker will be pleasant and productive. It is easy to see why they don't stay in their jobs as well a long period of time, as burnout is common, and you can help prevent that. And that is this week's Foster Parenting Manual Tip of the Week. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have this week's question, this week's Foster Care Question of the Week from my Facebook page. First, we got to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we've got that question. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This is Dr. John DeGarmo. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. An insightful, interesting new book called Fostering Love, available at Amazon or where you buy books. John DeGarmo learns that to follow God's call in his life means to take up his cross in his own home. This book is a true life account of his experience as a foster parent, along with his wife and their own three children, as he followed God's call to take foster children into his home. This is a story of heartbreak, sadness, and ultimate love as he comes to find God in the tears and smiles of many foster children. Fostering Love by Dr. John DeGarmo.
Welcome to the award-winning Fostering Families Today magazine. Foster parents are called to give their hearts, share their homes, and make a difference in the life of a child. The journey is difficult and filled with heartbreak and loss. but also joy as an inspiration as they see the children in their care make small changes or large accomplishments. Fostering Families Today has been ministering to the hearts of those families for 15 years, celebrating the joys, educating for the future, and sharing in the bumps and bruises of the fostering journey. It's more than a magazine. It's a training tool, a therapeutic intervention, and a friend to lean on. Let Fostering Families Today be part of your journey. Find us on the internet at www.adoptinfo.net or call for additional information toll-free at 888-924-6736.
Hi, this is Chris Chmielewski, owner, editor, and creator of Foster Focus magazine, the only monthly foster care magazine in America. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo. Enjoy and visit fosterfocusmag.com.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And we're back with Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. At this time, we look at this week's foster care question of the week. We do it every single Monday morning on my Facebook page. Just go to Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert. This week we ask, what is the one thing new you learned after your first placement of a foster child in your home? And these are some of your responses. Shay says, how little support I would get from Department of Children's Services, and how little I really knew after my classes. You learn policy in classes. You learn how to be a foster parent from other foster parents. I immediately joined the local foster parent association, and they saved my behind on many occasions. You know, Shay, I couldn't agree with you any more than that. I realized within my first 20 minutes of my first placement that, I was not prepared. Training really didn't get me that far. It's real life experiences, isn't it? Melissa says how terribly flawed our system is. Susan says how little I knew about fostering. I thought it would be like babysitting 24 hours a day. Didn't understand the luggage these kids bring with them. This week's foster care question of the week, what is the one thing new you learned about your first placement of a foster child in your home? Brooke says the system is flawed. They need to put the child's welfare first. Alex says that kids come into care with only the clothes on their back. Katie says, just for the weekend is really just never just for the weekend. Katie, yeah, I agree. If you're in my book, Fostering Love, you know that one of our just the weekends turned out to be a year and a half. So, yeah, I agree with you there. Dawn says, my first foster child just left me after to go to a group home. I had her for 6 months, and I fell in love with her. But she needed so much more support, emotional support that I could give her. But the things they put on court paper that I had stated were long stretches from the truth. The system is definitely flawed. Wendy says the DSS or child welfare system will say or agree to anything to get you to take a placement and then change their minds. Dennis says the lies told you about placement by a court case manager. Monique says how easy it is to fall in love with the child, with a teenage stranger, how quickly you go from looking out for their best interests to full mama bear mode. I love it, Monique. I love it. This week's foster care question of the week, what is the one thing new you learned after your first placement of a foster child in your home? And we're looking at some of your responses here. And There we are. Cindy says, surprised at how little they will pay for. Here is an extra child to feed, clothe, and enroll in extracurricular activities, but we have no money in the budget other than to provide via the stipend. Some kids come with just the clothes in their back, and resource parents are expected to stretch this money check to cover everything. Lots of foster parents would love to bring their kids to, say, equestrian riding classes because they know how the child responds well to this. But you can't because financially it's impossible to swing it when you still have the resources the family to budget for. Even swim lessons were more than I thought you would. And she goes into quite a bit there, Cindy does, about some finances. Yeah, it's true, Cindy. It is true. It's difficult as foster parents to provide financially because these children do come with, you know, they come with needs. And if you love the children like your own children, like my own, like we do in our house, you want to provide these children every every single opportunity you can. Unfortunately, reality is it's difficult. You do not get that much when it comes to regards to per diem. Society may think otherwise, but we know the truth, don't we? Lisa says, I learned I could love them all, even their families. I could love the cuddly babies and toddlers, the cussing and angry children, the sneaky teens, and all the children that were medically fragile. I found out later that my own biological children could be surprisingly difficult. I wondered how unflattering the paragraph written about them could be and if anybody would want them. That's nice. Well said there. Well said. Shannon says, yes, the system is flawed, but remember that caseworkers have to work within those flawed limits. There are a great many skilled caring caseworkers who don't need to be the scapegoats of flawed system. I am a foster parent, not a caseworker. We can all do the best for these kids within the legal system, but we need to be a team. If you think the system is so flawed, then get involved in changing it and stop making matters worse by being judgmental of everyone involved. You know, Shannon, I think you must have read what we talked about just about earlier, how to create a healthy relationship with your caseworkers, because you've nailed it right there. You have nailed it right there. Wonderful. All right, we'll look at just a couple more here. This is this week's Foster Care Question of the Week, and ask, what is the one new thing you learned after your first placement of a foster child in your home? We'll do a couple more here. Jody says, whatever you thought you knew about parenting flew out the window. Oh, I agree there. I agree. Cindy says, every child in care should be provided the opportunity to be taught how to swim. It can save their lives someday, yet there are very few resources to provide this. It kills me how the Red Cross gets tons of money in donations, grants, and subsidies, yet there are no programs for foster children. Yeah, that is true, Cindy. It is difficult. And one of the things children will learn when they leave our home, they're old enough, we are blessed to have a swimming pool, and every child that leaves my house, if he's 4 years old or older, they will know how to swim. Those are just some of the responses on this week's Foster Care Question of the Week. You can find more responses, and you can add your response as well. It's not too late. Just go to my Facebook page, Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert, and you'll find it there on this week's Foster Care Question of the Week. All right, I want to thank our wonderful guests this week, Madeline and Rachel, the authors of a great, great, great book. I can't say enough about it. The book is called Encouragement for the Adoption and Parenting Journey, 52 Devotions and a Journal. And our guests were Madeline Melcher, and the co-author was Rachel Garlinghouse. And they had a wonderful testimony. They are two adoptive parents themselves, and they were so kind to join us in the show this week. I also want to thank you this week for joining us. I want to thank all the mothers out there and wish them a belated Happy Mother's Day. Okay, I am taking the week off next week. My daughter is graduating from high school Saturday. My oldest daughter is graduating from high school, and she is going to Australia for 1 year. Now, I hear a lot of people tell me, but what happens if she falls in love with some Australian and marries him over there? And I say to them, well, what's wrong with that? My wife's from Australia. I fell in love with her and married her. Now, truth be known, nobody in America here would marry me. There was just apparently word got out that I was such a creep and looked so ugly and smelled so bad that I had to go halfway around the world to find someone to marry me. So I'm grateful for my wife, and I'm grateful for my daughter to have the opportunity to go there for a year. She's going to learn so much. So next week, we're going to take her on vacation, one last family vacation with her. So I will be away from the show next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Coming up in June, which is right around the corner, I'll be in Virginia at the National Foster Parent Association's 2015 conference. I hope to see you there. And coming up in coming up at the beginning of June, we have our new ebook coming out, Foster Parenting 101, next month. Next month's version will be Inspirational Verses and Poems for Foster Parents. This is one that you are going to want to have yourself. Has some encouraging words, inspirational words, and poems for the foster parent. Because we know it can be difficult at times, can't it? It sure can. All right. For the Fostering Success USA Radio Network, I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. Thank you for joining in this week. And you want to hear this program? Just go to my website, Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert. And you can listen. You can download this week's episode. You can listen to past archives of the show as well. And tomorrow, the brand new video, Foster Care 101. This week, we're going to look at heartbreak for foster parents. All right. Until next week, my friend, I bid you cheers.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program.